Sometimes you feel so alone and overwhelmed, you don't know where to turn. These days, it seems like there is no end to our problems. We invite you to connect with Silent Unity, the 24-hour prayer ministry, where someone is waiting to pray with you right now. Since 1890, Silent Unity has always been there. No judgment or dogma, just someone affirming the best for you. Call 816-969-2000 today. You can also connect online at unityprayervigil.org.
Unity Online Radio, the voice of an awakening world.
Welcome to World Spirituality, exploring the unity within all cultures and faith traditions with Paul John Roach, minister of Unity Church of Fort Worth in Fort Worth, Texas. Discover the universal principles present in all the world's religions and take an incredible journey to new understanding. Now, here is your host, Paul John Roach.
So hello and welcome to World Spirituality on the Unity Online Radio Network. Yes, I'm your host, Paul John Roach, and I'm coming to you from Unity Fort Worth in Fort Worth, Texas. And today we explore the topic of forgiveness, one of those concepts that is often misunderstood, but one that can help us live a more empowered and compassionate life. And my guest, Emily J. Hooks, has written a beautiful book on this topic. It's a handbook, really, because it really goes into details of how to apply the principles of forgiveness in our lives. And it's called The Power of Forgiveness, and it gives us a comprehensive and systematic insight into what forgiveness is and how we can harness its power. Many books have been written about forgiveness, and it's a topic that, of course, is often misunderstood in many circles, especially if we think of the old-timey Christian view on it, which is often misunderstood. But Emily explains it very, very clearly in wonderful prose, and it can be very helpful for us, I think. And I'm excited about having Emily on the show. She's the founder of the Forgiveness Academy based in Austin, Texas. She teaches widely on the subject of forgiveness and is also a freelance writer. So it is indeed a pleasure to welcome Emily to the show. Welcome. Glad you're with us.
Thank you so much. It's an honor to be here.
Before we talk about forgiveness and what it is and what it's not, you begin the book very honestly by sharing some of your story. Much of it was difficult in many ways, and yet you learned so much from it. And in fact, it sort of stimulated you to understand what forgiveness and compassion and empathy really were. Do you want to just tell us a little bit about the background there and your own personal story?
Sure. I'd be happy to. So I experienced some trauma as a young child, a young girl. I had a father who abducted me and hid me from my family for almost 4 years. That had a profound impact on my life, and unfortunately, I didn't have the skills that I needed when I came back. When I came back to the United States, to manage that pain, and it sort of stayed in me. I started managing it with coping mechanisms, including drugs and alcohol, at a very early age. I had a respite from that coping mechanism for a few years after my son was born in my early 20s. In the late 1990s, I went back to those coping mechanisms and fell into really a 4-year journey through hell, is how I describe it. And I mean that actually quite literally from a new thought perspective. Today I'm grateful for those years, but at the time it truly was the most fundamental type of torment. And so during that time, I had the opportunity to experience or to lay the foundation for a lot of the understanding that I developed moving through and out of that. I had a failed suicide attempt that ended in a near-death experience in 2000. Someone that I was dating in 2002 tried to take my life, came very, very close to successfully doing that. And really that moment in time marked the beginning of the end through this. I started beginning to be able to access a sense of compassion for myself that I've never felt before. And in late 2002, I had a moment, I call it a moment of grace, that took place. Got in touch with, deeply in touch with a sense of self-compassion and love that sparked a very rapid change in me. Within 5 months, I had done some of the things I'd been struggling to do for 4 years. I had a job. My son came home to live with me. I had a lovely home and started actually going to Unity about that time. And I started studying spiritual and religious texts and really laying the foundation for my own type of recovery and a deeper understanding of the things that matter in life and how to alleviate the suffering that had burdened me for so many years.
It was a very moving part in the book where you describe, you know, coming to the end of your rope, if you like, and you tried to commit suicide or whatever, and you were down in the river, dry riverbed in Texas, and it was a moment of surrender and release, you know, and instead of letting go of your body denying way, you sort of let go in a self-affirming way, right? That the sense of perfect rightness of everything was in good order in spite of all the trauma flooded your being, and it was a wonderful shift in consciousness. We might describe it as a mystical experience or whatever, but certainly one of those moments where we see that, oh, this is all meant for something more than what I've taken it to be, right? That it can actually be a blessing, even though it seems the most horrifying, terrible things that have happened to me. Ultimately, they all brought me to this new understanding. So in that sense, we can call it good. And I know it's easy to short-circuit this and say, oh, it's all good, you know, and that's really annoying when you're going through trauma and terror.
But it is all good.
Yeah, right. When we come through, but it was a beautiful moment, you know, because I've had similar experiences, and they seemingly come out of nowhere, don't they? We're not certainly not expecting them to happen. They're spontaneous.
Yes. That moment definitely laid the foundation for a level of faith that I did not have before. It really shifted many of the ideas that I had about. Can you hear me okay?
Yes. Yeah, I just had a coughing attack. Sorry.
Oh, okay. It really laid the foundation for a deeper understanding of some of the ideas that, you know, I thought I believed in before, but because it seemed to come from an external entity, the deep understanding it sort of shifted my perspective out of one of blind faith and into one of absolute understanding about some concepts that I had questioned for many years. There was something that ironic that happened as a result of that, however, though, and it's ironic in a beautiful way because I actually emerged from that failed suicide attempt very despondent. I was despondent because I'd failed to do the only thing that I could figure out how to end the suffering. The beautiful part about that despondency, though, is that it compelled me to move as deeply into the darkness as I needed to in order to come out on the other side, which is really the foundation for what I teach and what I believe, which is non-resistance. So we move through the experience that it's ours to have in the absence of resistance, and something magical happens on the other side, and that's exactly what happened.
Well, I think that's a very good point, you know, because we think, well, once I have this breaking open experience, this aha moment, this wonderful mystical time, then everything afterwards is going to be a piece of cake, you know, it's all going to be fine from thereafter. But, you know, you experienced it in a different way. But I think it did give you the strength maybe to look at the darkness in a way you couldn't before. And so it was a breakthrough into a new understanding. But it's not like, oh, well, everything's solved now, right? This thing is a process. And you mentioned that in the book. And it's also a discipline, I think you mentioned. In other words, we have to keep working at it. It's not just, over and done with. And I think there's many people, for instance, and many parts of ourselves that we're forgiving, that we continue to forgive. You know, we think we've done the work, and then it comes round again on the spiral, and we have to do some more forgiveness work. So it's not just one time and it's over, right? This is an absolute process of expanding into the light, if you like.
You know, I have a yes. The answer to the question is yes, and the answer is no as well. I do think it's a bit of a myth that we've sort of culturally accepted that absolute forgiveness isn't possible. It absolutely is, and I can say that with confidence because I've experienced it many times. And
right.
What I mean by absolute forgiveness is, you know, getting to a place of true gratitude for our experiences and having emotional neutrality around that experience. Now, the answer to the question, so, you know, we're no longer attached. I can tell my story without feeling the suffering and some of the emotions that even the people that read it experience, because I've gone through this process of forgiveness and released that, the illusion of attachment to it, right? Because it's in the past. And so there's, you know, that's the healing process, is getting to a place of true neutrality as it relates to things in the past. Now, forgiveness is an ongoing process and discipline, in the fact that new opportunities present themselves every day. And I will say that with self-forgiveness, it can be an ongoing process more so than with others. It really just depends on whether or not you get back in touch with a sense of suffering around an experience that has happened. It's sort of like levels, right? So we get to a place when we think we're there, but when we're really there, when we can, without hesitation, say that we are profoundly grateful for that experience. That's sort of the measure.
Well, and also I think this idea that, you know, we talk about this in Unity, that there is no time in reality. And once we enter into our spiritual identity, we're in a timeless moment. So it's not a question of perfecting ourselves, because that only happens in time, right? We're already whole and well and free. There's nothing to nothing to forgive at that level of understanding. Unfortunately, we're not always at that level of understanding. So that's where the discipline and the work come in, because, you know, we go back into our conditioned human selves, and those human selves, you know, carry a lot of baggage with them, no matter how much work we've done. And so there's the work. But every moment we're in that timeless place of wholeness and perfection, which is our true nature, then, of course, there's nothing to forgive, is there? It's just the light of compassion shining, and that's a beautiful thing too. So it kind of interpenetrates our humanness, if you like, but we're not always in full remembrance. I think it was a Zen teacher that says, you know, one moment of awakening is total enlightenment. One moment of forgetting is total non-enlightenment, you know, and it's so the choice is ours in any given moment to, Where are we? You know, where's our consciousness?
Right. And so this idea of forgiveness being a discipline, it also becomes, with practice, a virtue. So it becomes sort of an automatic response to things that happen in life with continued discipline. So hopefully that creates the opportunity for us to, you know, bridge that space between an experience of our inherent divinity and our human experience.
Yes, absolutely. You know, you mentioned the three selves here, that forgiveness is self-actualization, self-compassion, self-love. And I think a lot of people believe that you have to forgive others, you know, or that I can forgive, but I can never forget. You know, it's the idea that they hurt me, but I'm going to work on forgiving. But really, it's an inside job, isn't it? The most important part of forgiving is coming to forgiveness of ourselves for holding on to these feelings. And so what do you mean by self-actualization, self-compassion, self-love?
Well, I think the process itself is best defined, at least in a secular way, as self-actualization. It could also be defined as a movement towards enlightenment if we wanted to use strictly spiritual terms.
Right.
So it's really just about the evolution of our understanding in our human experience and in our higher consciousness. Self-love and self-compassion are, just as you stated, they're integral to the process because really all forgiveness is born in the judgment that there's something wrong with me. So if I need to forgive, that the need for that begins with the judgment, there's something wrong with me right now. And so the more we can cultivate an experience of self-love and self-compassion, the more we're able to get to a space of letting go of those judgments. If we have, in the absence of that judgment, just, you know, if we can just imagine for a second that we truly think that there's not something wrong with us, then suddenly we realize that the things that have happened in the past have actually been for our betterment to contribute to making us who we are today.
Right.
So, self-love and self-compassion are integral in that respect. And they're also the outcome of the process, which is beautiful, along with empathy, the ability to experience those things more fully and more frequently.
You know, when I was in the seminary at Unity, the definition that was often used for compassion was it was giving up something small for something larger. So we give up the lesser and the small and the ego-based, I guess, for the truth of who we are. And I kind of like that, interpretation of what forgiveness is, because it really is, isn't it? It's moving beyond those stuck places that drag us down and hold us back, and allowing ourselves to be, you know, the free, loving, empathetic beings that we are created to be in truth. So it's a technique for releasing that splendor that we naturally are, but we've got it hidden under the hides and skins of conditioning, if you like, that hold us back.
Absolutely. Absolutely. It is masked by the things that have defined us in many ways. Unfortunately, it's the injury that takes place or the perceived injury that takes place in life that oftentimes most define how we show up in life. And so it's really about, exactly as you said, shedding that skin and getting past the hurt, the shame, the anger, the resentment, and into a truer, more fundamental aspect of ourselves.
Well, before we go on to look at the process and some of the techniques that you have and the steps into forgiveness, we're going to the break on the first part of our show. Just really quickly, tell us what forgiveness isn't. What isn't it?
Oh, forgiveness is not letting people off the hook. It's not condoning unfair behavior. Really, anything that is related to the other person, it's not about. It's not forgetting. Dr. Robert Enright wrote a book called Forgiveness is a Choice, and he was very funny. In the book, he said forgiveness is not going to spontaneously cause amnesia.
Right.
So I really enjoyed that line. Forgiveness is not... excuse me. Forgiveness is not undoing the harm, the full impact of what has happened. That's one of the biggest illusions that people have. You know, when we experience things in life, they affect and change how we show up in life. And this forgiveness is about learning to appreciate and understand that version of ourselves is exactly what it's supposed to be. It's not a magic pill that undoes the things that have happened. What it does is it allows us to be liberated from the attachment to those things.
Yeah, and I love that, liberated from the attachment. But that doesn't mean that we didn't have these experiences and they were valid. They are valid. But we're not no longer attached to them in the sense that they're holding us down, holding us back. So I love that. There's healthy boundaries around this, isn't there? We don't have to love the behavior of another person, but we can still love and forgive them. And still, understand that behavior was unacceptable. So I think this is a way to overcome abuse too, isn't it? When we've had abuse situations in our lives, it's still real, but it doesn't have to be holding me back every single day. There's a difference there, folks. Go ahead.
Oh, sorry, I was just going to say, and that's one of the most important ones, is to recognize the distinction between reconciliation and trust and forgiveness.
Yes,
they're
yes.
completely distinct.
Right. Yeah, we may never be able to reconcile with a person physically or emotionally, but we can certainly forgive what they've done and what's happened for us so that we could be free of it, even though we may never get to the point of reconciliation, right?
Yeah.
I'm with Emily J. Hooks. We're talking about her book. It's called The Power of Forgiveness. When we come back, we'll look at some of the processes that lie behind her work here of the Forgiveness Academy. And join us in a couple of minutes after these messages from Unity.
As Unity Online Radio continues to expand its programming and outreach to the world, we count on the support of listeners like you. Please make your donation today. Go to www.unity.fm and click on Donate Now. The world is full of voices, advertising, television, politics, colleagues, family, and friends. All are too happy to tell us how to live. In all of that noise, it's easy to miss the one voice that matters, your own soul. What would happen if you could hear that voice? Imagine the clarity, confidence, and courage that would be yours and the life you could create. Join Janet Connor, best-selling author of Writing Down Your Soul, The Lotus and the Lily, and Your Soul Wants Five Things, as she and her guests explore how to hear the call of the soul and create the soul-directed life. Live Thursday at 1 p.m. Central, only on Unity Online Radio, the voice of an awakening world.
Go inside to find.
You've been listening to World Spirituality with host Reverend Paul John Roach. To learn more about Reverend Paul John Roach, visit his website, pauljohnroach.com. Or if you have questions, email him at pauljohnroach@yahoo.com. We now return to World Spirituality.
All right, welcome back to today's show. I'm with Emily J. Hooks, and we're talking about the power of forgiveness. And yeah, check out my website, pauljohnroach.com. Got some recent articles I put up there, plus ongoing podcasts of the Sunday messages and the latest shows from World Spirituality. So there's a lot of good stuff on there. Check it out. Also, email me. Let me know what you think about this show and other shows. pauljohnroach@yahoo.com. We're talking about forgiveness, and the wonderful thing about this book is that it's not just a philosophical treatise or even a theological treatise on the subject. It's a very practical method of releasing the power of forgiveness into our lives. And you've got a process, don't you, that you work through. In fact, a number of different ways of approach here. Talk about this, because this one is breaking the cycle. learning to trust, getting more compassion into our lives. And it has a physiological benefit as well as psychological, and developing compassion and empathy. So talk about that process.
So the framework that I have developed is based on some core competencies that we need to become forgiving, compassionate human beings. And these are not revolutionary competencies, but they've never been brought together in this context before.
Right.
And the reason I start the framework with the competencies and not with the steps is because in my experience, personal and working with other people, we get to a point of resistance in the process itself, and it's always, as far as I've ever experienced, based on one of these five competencies. And so if we can at least start getting familiar with these ideas, when they come up in the process, you're more prepared to keep moving through the process and maybe work on this whatever strength it is that you might need. So the competencies are understanding our story, emotional awareness, empathy, non-judgment, and then the fifth one is forgiveness itself.
Right. So, breaking the cycle, it can't happen unless we can understand our story, right? And the story is a sort of a new agey psychotherapeutic tool here. We talk about it a lot, don't we, our story? But it's basically what we tell ourselves is the reality of our history, I guess. And it has a certain relevance, right? But it's not ultimately the truth, because it is a story, and stories can change, right?
Right. Yeah, that really is the core of that competency. It's about distinguishing what happened from the story that we have about what happened and the impact of what happened. So these are all three distinct things. Something happened. Yes, we can all agree that something happened. And then we have the story about what happened. And there are a couple of important distinctions there. When we merge these ideas that the story that we have about what happened is what happened, we feel powerless. And the reasons for that are pretty fundamental, and that is because what happened in the past, right? And so we don't have the ability to affect change if we believe that the story about what has happened in our lives is actually the same thing as what happened.
And
it's actually a great opportunity when we consider that, right? Because the story is happening now. And then if we do some further exploration around this idea of story, what we find is that a lot of the details that we have about our lives have been developed along the way. So, we make a decision about how something has impacted us. It's not a decision. We inherently a decision. We observe how something might have impacted us. And then what happens as a natural human tendency, a psychological tendency, is we look for evidence to reinforce that belief that we have. And so with time, the story begins to become more vivid and embellished, and it can evolve into something that with a deep exploration we might find and we might not find is not necessarily fully grounded in what happened. Now, it's important, I always like to pause at this point and point out that I'm not by any measure denying someone the right to their story. That is a very common control mechanism that that people use to try and deny people their story. That's not at all what we're saying here. What we're saying is that the story that we have is happening now, and what happened in the past. And just as a sort of a lighthearted example of trying to get to a space of understanding the difference, if you think about the last time you went to the grocery store, do you remember how you felt when you were buying your oranges? Or do you remember what the man on aisle 8 looked like, or even if there was a man on aisle 8? And the answer to those questions is no. Most of us, 99.9% of us, don't know the answers to those questions. And yet when we think about a traumatic event that has happened in our lives, oftentimes we know exactly how we felt. And we know details about those moments in time may or may not, ultimately they don't even really matter, but may or may not be grounded in what happened. And so this is an exploration and possibility. It's not saying that those things didn't happen. It's about exploring how we feel in our bodies. How do we have a sense of less suffering and less attachment when we consider this as a possibility? And so that's the sort of the beginning of this idea of understanding our story. There's a lot more to it, but that's the beginning. And the other distinction is impact. And the reason that that is important, we already touched on this, is because impact is going to show up in our lives. And so if we can get a sense of the impact of what has happened in our lives, when it shows back up, we can remind ourselves that we've done this forgiveness work and be responsible for the impact.
Right.
Because we're responsible for our lives today, right? If something happened 20 years ago, I can give an example of this. I was walking in the woods a couple months ago, and I had a negative thought about my father, and I've experienced absolute forgiveness for my father for many, many years. And because I was going through something in my life at that point to break an end of a relationship, I was associating naturally the suffering that I felt with the actions of my father in the past. And that is a powerless feeling. So when I realized I'd done the forgiveness work and the impact of my life and the choice, the things that have happened in my life is still real, I could be empowered to navigate the situation from the person I know I am today, rather than giving that power away to my father who's, you know, passed away 10 years ago. And,
right.
You know, so that's really the power of making those distinctions.
Very good stuff. And I think the saddest thing is when we, you know, identify so strongly with our story that we're afraid to give it up because there won't be anybody left, you know. And I know that's a cycle that happens to disempowered people or people of, you know, suffering from abuse, is that we will even protect our abuser, you know, because that story is so strong and that connection with the abuser is so powerful that it's more important to hold on to the relationship, even if it's dysfunctional, than to risk, you know, entering the void of moving beyond this. And I think that's the cycle, isn't it, that keeps us stuck so often, is that the fear of, you know, well, what, who am I going to be if I let go of the story, however traumatic it is? It sounds counterintuitive. It's like the Patty Hearst effect, you know, when we begin to empathize with our captors. And unfortunately, that's part of the human conditioning, I think.
Yeah. You know, it's interesting, this isn't in the book, but you reminded me of an experience that I had, or a point of resistance that I had when I started my healing journey 15 years ago. And that is exactly what you just described. I remember really being paralyzed and the fear of the void and that I was going to experience by letting go of the person that I'd been for so many years. And the thing about that is that void actually does happen, but it's temporary. Jesus talked about new wineskins, and it's that, right? It's about being okay with that transitional period and having faith that as we live our lives based purposefully in principles or guidelines, that suddenly something new starts to emerge, and that new thing is grounded in the things that we want to be in life, rather than feeling powerless because we're attached to that story that we have about who we are. But the void is real.
Absolutely, you know.
Yeah.
It's both and again. You know, you mentioned Einstein's quote. Is the universe friendly or hostile? You know, that's one of the most important things we can ask ourselves. And in a sense, we can say yes to both. You know, it's both friendly and beneficent, but it's also got, you know, a terrifying aspect to it. And the void itself can be, you know, beautifully shining and empty and welcoming, but it can also feel like it's going to blow us away and annihilate us. And there is a certain sense of annihilation is, you know, has to happen. The Sufis talk about it a lot, about annihilation, and in the Christian tradition, there's this idea of self-emptying, kenosis. So we have to face this dark night of the soul, don't we? In order to experience the joy of freedom. So it's like jumping, you know, out of an aircraft or whatever. Takes a lot of courage because you don't know what's going to happen next. But on the other hand, there's an exhilaration when we do. So, we live in a both-end universe. You know, Meister Eckhart talked about the pain body, and you talk about where you hold psychological pain. So what do you mean by that?
So when I speak about where we hold psychological pain, that's part of the second competency. And first of all, I'm a huge fan of the pain body concept, but it's not really what I'm referring to. I'm speaking more somatically. So if we can use our tool as a body, our body as a tool, then by associating when we feel a certain way with the sensations in our body, then we can start to build our emotional competency, essentially. We spend most of our lives, many of us spend most of our lives, you know, denying or numbing out or, you know, just resisting feeling. And Brene Brown says, you can't numb selectively. So if we're numbing, if we're resisting the experience of suffering, we're also denying ourselves joy and gratitude and all of the beautiful things. And all of those feelings have implications in our bodies. And so we can use that understanding of where these sensations take place in our body to more directly honor and accept when we're having an experience. So when your stomach gets tight, you might not be thinking, you know, I'm feeling anxious or I'm, you know, feeling sad. But we know our stomach is tight. And as we build this competency, we can say, okay, what's going on? And we can create space to acknowledge those things.
The third competency you talk about is empathy. And that really is powerful, isn't it? Because we've moved beyond the limits of our mind body and we're into another understanding that in truth we are all connected. There is only one of us here, as we often say in unity, and empathy is understanding that is the truth, isn't it? That we all suffer, you know. They say that be kind, because everyone we meet is fighting a huge battle. And when we understand that we're all indeed fighting a battle, it may be a different battle for each of us, but it's still a big battle, then we begin to say, oh my goodness, you know, I shouldn't be so harsh on the other person because they're suffering as much as I am. You know, they're going through as much difficulty as I am. So it yields an empathetic and compassionate viewpoint towards these folks. So is that the way you understand it?
Sure. So this is one of the biggest points of resistance for some people in the process, because what we're asking when we say we're going to forgive someone is we're asking that we connect with them on a human level. And so we're asking that we empathize with the person that we perceive to have caused us the most harm in life and everybody else eventually. And that's a point of contention for a lot of people. We don't want to start there, and so we start exploring the idea of human connection, and we can do that by working on other people, or we can work directly on what, you know, the person that I call in the book the perpetrator. It's important because as long as we have a judgment about that person, we're not going to be able to fully experience the peace that comes with forgiveness.
Yes.
So we need to get to a point of recognizing and Later in the book, I talk about recognizing that the judgments that we have about other people are really opportunities to see something in ourselves. And I think that when we can start to exercise that idea, it becomes a little easier to empathize with people. But it is challenging, particularly at the beginning of the process. I just like to acknowledge that. And you don't have to force this. We get to a place through the process of developing love, compassion, and empathy where we can truly experience gratitude for the other people in our lives. Go ahead.
No, I was going to say, you have a quote from Marcus Aurelius in the book along these lines, you know, that he invites us when we're feeling, you know, a resentment or annoyance at another person for what they're exhibiting, the behavior they're exhibiting, you know, ask yourself, well, what behavior is similar in my own being, in my own life? And so that we, you know, begin to say, oh, well, you know, I've got that too. And of course, in the modern psychological terminology, you know, we talk a lot about projection, don't we? We don't mm-hmm. see it in other, we don't see it in other people. Unless it was in us, you know, because the very things that annoy us the most about other people are stuff that we have or that we deny that we have, you know, that we've stuffed or put somewhere in the shadow side of us, but that needs to be released. So, you know, yeah. In other words, everything's for learning, right? So the very people that push our buttons the most are our greatest friends, really, because they are awakening us to something that we haven't looked at or not willing to look at in some way. We haven't owned our story.
Yeah. Yeah, it really comes down to recognizing the other powerful thing about empathy is to recognize that the things that other people do, they don't do because of you. They do it because of themselves. We're all the main character in our own narrative. And so that really helps get to a place of deeper empathy for other people when we recognize that the suffering that we experience does a result of someone else's actions and even the actions of ourselves. It wasn't about us. It wasn't about us. Trying, you know, the actions of other people isn't about us, you know, in any way whatsoever. It's about reinforcing a false belief that they have about themselves. And the same is true for self-forgiveness. You know, when you do an honest exploration of our motivations, and I came about this organically working on a memoir, and I realized it's not easy to write that because, you know, people want to know why you did what you did. And an honest exploration of that shows that I don't really know. I did it for lots and lots of reasons, you know. So it's a challenging idea, but it's also liberating because we can stop taking things personally.
Yeah, I like novels that explore some of this because they take a certain character or event and maybe play it numerous times, you know, throughout the novel or mm-hmm. from different characters' point of view around the event. And so you get to see, you know, the alternative ways it unfolded for different people and also in different ways it could have worked out in our own story, because sometimes we see it one way and then we'll use it and take it in another way. So there's never an absolute in when it comes to our humanness, you know, that it's open for speculation and transformation. And that's good, though, right? So that we can always escape into a larger reality. I guess the word escape is the wrong word, but so we can move effectively into another larger reality. What about this? Yeah, go ahead.
I was just going to say that other reality is where we find levity, because we realize that all of the stories that we have, all of the judgments and the lack of connection, maybe even just we can just live in the world of possibility. Maybe we're making it all up. And when we can get to that place, then life becomes less cumbersome and easier to navigate.
Well, you know, you got a great quote at the end of the book from Meister Eckhart. I've never come across this quote from him before. I don't know if it's apocryphal or what, but it's a great one. It says, of course, Meister Eckhart, for those who aren't familiar, was a wonderful Catholic mystic back in the early Middle Ages, probably one of the greatest mystics of all time in my appreciation. If you're a Buddhist, Meister Eckhart seems to be Buddhist. If you're a Hindu, he seems Hindu. And if you're a unitic, he seems one of us in unity.
Yeah.
Just a very deep, profound thinker, very free. But he wrote this. He says, my Lord told me a joke, and seeing him laugh has done more for me than any scripture I will ever read. And I love that. You know, the Lord told me a joke, because, you know, talk about levity. But seeing God laugh, you know, understanding that God is an exuberant God, you know, God of laughter and dance, and not just this judgmental God, that brought him closer to what this universe is, right? That it's a play of wonderful forces here, and we don't have to take it all so seriously. We love to laugh at our church particularly, and we laugh not at other people or a joke so much as just the human condition, you know, that we can all laugh and understand it, and it frees us, doesn't it? There's a buoyancy that comes when we can laugh about things.
Yeah, absolutely.
But I do have a question here, and you cover it a little bit in the book, and a lot of people say, oh, well, you know, I can forgive others, but I'll never forgive God. You know, why did God create this universe the way it is? Why is there suffering? Why is there horror in this world? What kind of a God is this? As C.S. Lewis once put it, is he a cosmic sadist? So how do you address that?
You know, I think I could write a whole book about this, because it is a different level of suffering, right? It's not a different level. It's a different sort of experience of suffering when we can't tie it to something specific. And a lot of theologians believe that the need for forgiveness of God or the universe or however you relate to this thing that's greater than us isn't even a relevant conversation. I think it's a very relevant conversation to have. And it goes back to the quote that you shared from Einstein, and it's, are we going to live in a friendly or hostile universe? And if we can start from that framework, okay, I'm going to create or create space to manifest a friendly universe and to see my experiences up until this point through the eyes of that universe, then we come to recognize that there's nothing working against us. The irony of this whole idea of needing to forgive God is that it implies that there is one. And you hear from a lot of people that they question their faith because of the things that have happened. The beautiful thing about that is that they have that faith. I think the challenge is they don't recognize their own power and how they perceive it. I hope that doesn't sound like a non-answer. It's not a non-answer, that the suffering that we experience from the things that can't be related to the actions of others is real. And a lot of times it can be treated, for lack of a better word, with compassion and non-judgment, and finding space to consider the possibility that the thing we believe in is not in our best interest. If it's working against us and it's grounded in faith, then why would we allow that? You know, and a lot of this is born out of the history of Christianity, right? We were purposefully sort of taught that God got to do vengeful things in the world, and people believed that. If I had that faith, I would question it too.
Right.
We don't live in a world where there's an entity out there enacting judgment to teach us lessons. That's not the paradigm that that I believe reflects my experiences. And where my faith isn't, my faith is not grounded in that paradigm. And I can understand a great deal of fear if it is.
Right, absolutely. Well, you know, it's part of this both and conundrum again, isn't it? You know, if we are to have free will, if we are to feel, if we are to evolve and explore, then it comes at a cost. It comes at a cost of pain and trauma, because, you know, you can't have freedom without that. So I think it's God's great gift to us. And even though it seems like, how could God create that? It really, if you understand it in a more profound way, it's, my goodness, look what God, or whatever it is, allowed us to experience, you know, total free will, which can take us into some terribly dark places, but can also redeem us and free us into the light. So, you know, if there's no free will, there's no opportunity for awareness and awakening. So this is the great gift that we've been given. But you know, at the cost of pain. Of course, only pain and suffering to the body, right? Because the spirit within us is free of all that. So there's the ultimate. Joy, I guess, is that this pain is only a temporary thing, if you like. It's only to do with time and change, whereas in the changeless reality of who we are in truth, that there's only freedom. Yeah. I do want to, before we finish today, you've got like 8 steps a process here that gets really specific, doesn't it? You know, about writing down what you need, sharing it with another, saying an affirmation that I forgive this person for whatever, wish them well. So a whole process, and it ends with ritualizing and celebrating your success. You mentioned earlier to, you know, be grateful for it, and you can't celebrate unless you're grateful for whatever it is. So it is a specific process too, isn't it? You have to do specific things in order to free ourselves to into forgiveness.
Yeah, that goes back to the, you know, the bad rap that forgiveness gets, because what we learn, and at least in the secular context, what we learn is that forgiveness is not letting someone get the best of you. That's essentially what we're taught is, you know, just let it go. Just let it roll off your back, all of these expressions about just letting it go. And so forgiveness gets a bad rap because that doesn't work.
Right.
If we've been injured, we need to honor that. And this process very specifically sort of outlines how we can truly, truly get to a place of forgiveness. You know, it's based in a lot of different learnings that I've had over the years. It's certainly influenced by some of the 12-step ideas that exist out there in the world. And so, yeah, it's a lot of psychological techniques in there as far as journaling and writing and repeating. So it's really about sort of training ourselves to let go of judgment, to embrace empathy, and to walk through the steps. And it's funny because I think the fourth step, is it number 4 or number 5? Is it where we have to put pen to paper and say, I forgive so-and-so for X, Y, and Z. Step 5. That is actually, interestingly enough, ends up being one of the hardest steps for people because it really is pen to paper. And frankly, most people don't mean it when they start the process. And I say in the book, just do it anyway.
Right.
You're just writing and saying things. It's okay. And in that repetition and the power of it, you know, one word at a time, we start to consider the possibility that it's true, in the presence of a vision for, you know, what we want from life. People don't practice forgiveness just randomly. They do it because they're suffering.
Right.
And when we can get in touch with the impact of that suffering in our lives, which is why step 2 is to acknowledge our suffering, then we become highly motivated to move through the process.
Folks, we're at the end of the show already. I can't believe it rushed by so quickly. I know. But we hope you've learned something about forgiveness and been fascinated by the work that Emily has been doing with her Forgiveness Academy and this wonderful book, The Power of Forgiveness. And you can get it in all the usual outlets, right? It's available to folks if they want to read it.
It is not available yet. So if you are interested in pre-ordering it, it will be available for pre-sale in November. And you can go to emilyjhooks.com/PPOF, The Power of Forgiveness, and just enter your name and email address, and you'll find out when I launch the pre-sales. And the book will be available in outlets in early 2017.
Ah, okay. Well, we're ahead of the game then. So you'll have to wait a little bit, folks. But you can certainly go to Emily J. Hooks's homepage, check that out. And if you're in the Austin area, you can get involved with the many things that she's doing. We're at the end of the show. Let me tell you about next week's show, and then we'll say goodbye to Emily. Next week, author and psychotherapist Ruth Cherry joins me. She's going to discuss her new book. It's called Accepting Unconditional Love. That's a nice tie-in to today's theme, I think. So that should be good. So thanks, Emily, for being with us today. We appreciate your presence.
It was a pleasure, absolutely. Thank you so much for inviting me.
You're welcome, yeah. And thanks for listening, yeah. Everyone. And join me next week. Take care now.
Thank you for tuning in to World Spirituality with Reverend Paul John Roach. Join us every Tuesday at 1 p.m. Central to further examine the spiritual teachings and religious traditions of our world and to discover the universal truth principles present in all. World Spirituality, only on UnityOnlineRadio.org, the voice of an awakening world. This program is brought to you in part by Unity Church of Fort Worth in Fort Worth, Texas, celebrating the Christ Spirit in all people. Online at www.unityfortworth.org.
Somewhere, tucked away in the Unity Library archives in Unity Village, Missouri, you can find a secret treasure. They are the scripts from Unity co-founder Charles Fillmore's early days on broadcast radio, the teachings of Unity's founders, almost 100 years old. Now, for the first time in history, you can hear them through the power of the Internet. Join Bob Brock every Tuesday at 10 a.m. Pacific, 1 p.m. Eastern, for Unity Classic Radio, Words from Our Past. Discover the wisdom of Charles Fillmore's talks and of other Unity Radio speakers read on the air again. Call in your comments and questions as Bob and his special guests revisit Unity Radio talks of the past, along with historical background from the early days of the Unity movement. That's Unity Classic Radio, Words from Our Past, every Tuesday at 10 a.m. Pacific, 1 p.m. Eastern, right here on Unity FM, the voice of an awakening world.
Great teachers through the ages have spoken of the importance of our mind and of being master over our thoughts. How often do we forget that we are the ones who decide what thoughts we'll hold and what thoughts we'll reject? The world's great teachers also remind us that our thoughts create our experience. We may not be able to change what is happening in our world, but we can always choose how we will respond to the changing situations of our lives. With a positive attitude, your chance for success in any situation can be greater. That's because a positive attitude will inspire you to look for workable solutions, rather than allowing negative thinking to limit your decision making. This Law of Life is brought to you by Unity.
To find a Unity Church near you, visit www.unity.org.
Sometimes you feel so alone and overwhelmed, you don't know where to turn. These days, it seems like there is no end to our problems. We invite you to connect with Silent Unity, the 24-hour prayer ministry where someone is waiting to pray with you right now. Since 1890, Silent Unity has always been there. No judgment or dogma, just someone affirming the best for you. Call 816-969-2000 today. You can also connect online at unityprayervigil.org.